Welcome back to Geeks at College. Now reporting from oneofus.net.
Woo!
Hooray!
Moving on up, motherfuckers.
Pirates. Yeah, now we're gonna say all the words we couldn't say otherwise, like thesaurus.
And
or as
rabble.
Don't call me a thesaurus again.
Or maelstrom.
Or call me Shirley.
Or lasagna.
Or
oh man, you sound like you're playing it too far. Next thing you know, we'll be saying tortellini.
I hope there's one person that goes through all like previous 101 episodes of Geeks at College and listens to see if we said lasagna before.
I think we said lasagna, but I know we haven't said thesaurus.
Really?
We also haven't said the word satichelli.
Satichelli.
Taylor, when would we have ever used the word thesaurus in a conversation?
I don't know. We've used a lot of fucking stupid words in this show. Alright, if you haven't already guessed, I am your host, Taylor. I am joined by Casey.
Well, that's saying we're on one of us. We can use our real names now. That's Tyler, I'm Kyle, and that's Chetina.
No, it's Chip.
It's Chris. Yes. Anywho.
Groan.
Now I refuse to be called anything besides my real name, Kaser.
Shut the fuck up, Kaser.
Shut the front door.
No, you can refer to my nickname, the Casey.
Casey's my slave name.
Casey's my slave name.
Kaser. Kaser. Kunta Kaser.
Kunta Kaser.
And
I'm like, to call you that in public and see how many people give me a bad look.
Your name is Casey.
Fucking Kunta Kaser.
Roots. Anyway.
Isn't Kunta Kaser sounds like something from Star Wars?
Probably because it is.
I guarantee you.
I could dig for something that probably is
somewhere
close to Kunta Kaser.
Somewhere in the expanded universe. I mean, we're talking about a universe where there's a genre of music called jizz music, guys.
I'm sure one of the...
Hey, that's real canon, apparently.
Yes, it is. And
I'm sure one of the people that attended Jabba the Hutt's party was named Kunta Kaser. So, in... What's Max Rebo's, like, 15-part band... There's someone named Kunta Kaser.
Yeah, beyond Cy Soodles and the fucking...
The
rabbit guy. Yeah,
the rabbit guy
is Kunta Kaser.
You mean the one that they added in for special edition who just, like, yells at the camera?
Yeah.
Like the is that the lady that sings?
Well, no, that's Cy Soodles.
Oh, you guys know its name.
Yeah, we're that bad.
Oh, fuck.
Hey, for your information, the Max Rebo band, Taylor, I just want you to think about this. You know the whole theory that there's an alternate universe where every alternative thing has happened?
Yes.
That means in 1963, Ed Sullivan introduced the Max Rebo band to America, and they took off and became bigger than Jesus.
And Max Rebo said, does Max Rebo talk?
No.
Or does he, fart? face.
I like to think that the one with the kind of penis-shaped head went, we're more popular than Jesus now.
I know, right? I was thinking that, too.
Penis head.
I hope Max Rebo said that they're bigger than Jesus. And then the Vatican would say that they're satanic, but then the Vatican would name Revolver Max Rebo's 1966, or is it 65?
66.
66 classic album. The best pop album of all time. So,
yep. And then say, you know, they kind of had a point.
Yeah, you know what?
Hey, Taylor, you can draw. You want to draw something that I would love forever? Do the cover of Revolver, that illustration, as the Max Rebo band.
What would it be? It'd have to be called something besides
Rebover.
Rebover.
Revolver.
Rebover.
No, Revolver.
Revolver.
Yeah.
I can't. The next one, however, their next album needs to be called Captain Nita's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
My God. Okay. Speaking of space operas, we're going to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy this segment.
I thought we were talking about Boyhood.
No, we're not doing what Red Letter Media did.
Wait, what the fuck did they do?
Okay, like, so
they did a double review
for their half in the bag. About it. For their half in the bag of Boyhood and Guardians of the Galaxy, when they were summing up the movie Guardians of the Galaxy, they gave the synopsis of Boyhood. It's like, it's about a young boy. It's ambitiously shot over 12 years by a young boy named Star-Lord growing up.
No. Where he's like, they form a team called the Boyhood.
Oh, so it's about as genius as the watching the three Transformers movies all together at once.
Which is fucking genius.
That is fucking genius.
I think that they deserve a Nobel Prize in something. I don't care what it is. Nobel
Prize in entertainment.
No, I don't care what it is. It could be a Nobel Prize in chemistry or physics. But they deserve something.
Realizing how fucking stupid those movies are.
Yeah.
But we're talking about
brain cells trying to watch those movies.
We're talking about Guardians of the Galaxy and
something that you don't have to lose brain cells to enjoy.
No, you don't.
But you don't need to.
Nah, you can keep them.
What I think we should do is we'll like give our thoughts.
In that case, Chris, you want to know the thing that bugged me throughout the entire movie? Where is he getting batteries for his Walkman in space?
Dude, they probably like gave him a fucking spark that just makes it like last forever and be like, batteries, who needs that shit?
Yeah, but did they say explicitly in the movie? No, that's
nah.
Plot hole, 4 out of 10.
Yeah, he's gonna shit all over this movie, kids.
Actually, I hate to break it to you, Chris. I do really love this movie.
Oh, then stop nitpicking.
Well, Chris, you were saying that you can keep the brain cells. Like, there is some fridge logic in this movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, all Marvel movies, I would argue, have fridge logic.
Oh, most definitely.
But that's okay, you know.
No, it's like something I said on Facebook recently when I notice a plot hole in Star Wars that I never noticed before.
Yeah,
and it's just you know how remember after they escaped the Death Star, Princess Leia is like, they let us go. There's no other way we could have gone away that easy. This was definitely they're tracking us. We're gonna lead them right to Rebel Base. And then her next line is, I can only hope that when we analyze the data, a weakness can be found. She doesn't know that the information they have is any good. She has a hunch, but she's banking on that hunch. And what if that didn't pay off? What if it just told her where all the urinals in the Death Star were? And which is the
then
best?
Then that is a weakness, so you throw grenades in them, and then boom, the Death Star gets blown the fuck out.
That's actually what that like little hole at the end of the trenches leads to, is like their septic tank.
Yeah.
It's an exhaust port.
It's a methane dump.
Yeah. So they exploded, so the Death Star exploded because of methane.
Yeah.
They didn't have to watch an Adam Sandler movie to get the runny dump in there.
I'm just imagining like Peter Cushing's character, like if you just added a fart sound, he like let out one last fart.
Oh god.
As his last will and testament and then exploded.
Oh, that would have been great.
But think about it, Leia is totally banking on, what if that didn't pay off? Then she led the Death Star to the Rebel base, and they have, what, maybe 2 hours to evacuate everybody?
They'd be fucked. And it'd be great.
Yeah, so what the shit, like, you could have gone to some place, like, here's a suggestion, Dantooine, or maybe something.
But she already used Dantooine.
Yeah, well, Chris,
that's where they're gonna go next, like...
It's a galaxy. They could go literally any planet and just analyze the data. See, hey, is there anything of value? Okay, there is. Okay, now we'll go there.
You know where they really could have gone in that situation? The nowhere. Hey, speaking of the nowhere, aren't we talking about some other space opera?
They're both owned by Disney. It could be in canon.
Oh, God.
I thought we were talking about Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
Yes. That's fucking horrifying.
I thought we were talking about Escape from a Planet of the Apes.
I'm honestly surprised there wasn't, like, some... I mean, we did see one George Lucas-created thing. Yep. Oh, well, not created, but we'll save that. No spoiling it just yet, because we're going to have a spoiler ride.
That was the weirdest thing.
That is my favorite moment in a movie this year. I'll actually say that.
Anyway, before we get into spoiler stuff, I want us to just kind of give our piece on the film. Non-spoiler, like, quick 5-minute review from each of us.
Okay, 5 minutes?
Well, not five minutes, 2 minutes, whatever.
Yeah.
Brief.
Alright, so a brief statement on that movie? Okay, I'll say, I really love this movie. It's what I want out of a summer blockbuster. It is a very funny movie, a very charming movie, and it's a very likable movie. There's not a single character you look at and go, oh my god, why is this here? This shouldn't be here. The dialogue is pretty consistent throughout. It's not so goofy you can't take it seriously, but it's not so heavy-handed. It really finds a great middle ground that it walks through the entire time. There's a great soundtrack to it. There's a great visual style going on for it. This is what I want from a summer blockbuster. Even if it's not my favorite of the Marvel movies, it's objectively better than most.
All right. So go fucking watch it already, Casey Gerard. Chris?
All right, I've seen it 2 times already. I'm pretty sure it's, like, my favorite Marvel movie. So I am going to also read this review from this new Facebook group called Reviews, which is, like, one of the silliest things I think I've ever been a part of, even worse than Ideas. All right, so this guy, Ravi, says, I saw Guardians of the Galaxy Saturday night. 4.5 out of 5. Rocket, Groot, and Drax were amazing. Gamora was good, too. Star-Lord was the best of the bunch. Ronan was a straightforward dick that I wanted dead. A certain someone looked and talked great. Definitely want to see this again. And aside from the 4.5 out of 5, yeah, that pretty much sums up everything I liked.
10 out of 10, would fuck again. Alright.
Yeah, 10 out of 10 would fuck twice.
And you did.
And then run away. Run far away. Like Star-Lord did from his family.
He didn't run away, he was kidnapped.
That's what he wants you to think.
Anywho.
He's running away from his feelings, you guys.
Alrighty, so is that it, Chris?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, like, other than that, like, the fucking, it just has some amazing production design. Like, every little nook and cranny is just detailed to the brim. So wonderful. It looks divine. And, like, I just want to, like, roll around on every set, like, at least once. I just want to have fun.
I only have one issue with the entire production design of this movie, and I totally understand why they did this. Even in Out in Outer Space, there are still humanoid characters to the point where you can't see any alien thing on them. And I think that everybody, besides Star-Lord, of course, should have had a rubber head or something. Just to separate him a little bit. He's the only Terran. He's the only human out there.
I don't know. Drax's eyes were kind of fucking weird.
But you're talking more about, like, John C. Reilly and a lot of Novacore, right?
Oh, yeah. I agree. Xandarians should have been a little different.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. It's like, oh, Glenn Close. I would love to see Glenn Close dressed as a Klingon.
That'd be funny.
That said, I do like how they kind of did the, as Red Letter Media mentioned, kind of the old Star Trek-y tradition of just painting someone a different color than their alien.
And I'm okay with that. It's just, I feel like having the Novacore be as humanoid as they were is kind of hurting the idea of Star-Lord's the only one out there. And I think that would really help, have Star-Lord be the only one out there, to isolate him just a little bit, but instead of him being brooding in his isolation, desperate to find his way home, it's like, I'm having fun.
Yeah, I mean, even if it was like one slight little weird thing like they do in the new Star Trek movies, I think it would have been even better.
Wait, what do you mean, slight little thing?
Oh, like, remember when Kirk's about to be born and that midwife is telling Kirk's mom to push, And you see, and you like look at her like, oh, she kind of looks just like a human, except her eyes are fucking huge.
Yeah.
Shit like that.
Yeah. Well, there's a theory in science that, that if we find aliens, they actually could just look like rubber-headed aliens from Star Trek, because the same advantages that got us to be how we are on Earth with a head with two eyes, a nose, and a mouth, that could show up in other plants, because like, oh, those were the best evolutionary advantages, so that could also be the best evolutionary advantages on another planet. So there's an infinite way that you could just do a variety of different combinations of the same basic rubber forehead style. And I kind of wish they did more of that, but again, all of my issues with this movie are tiny nitpicks like that. There's not really any major, oh my god, why did you do this? This was a big mistake, or anything like that.
Okay. My turn?
Your turn.
Alright, I agree with both of you pretty much. This is probably in my top three of Marvel films. I loved how it was funny. I liked the emotional elements. I liked how it was characters first in the way they approached making this film. Like, you can tell that they cared about the characters, and that's why we like it. It's also why we like the Avengers, except they pretty much compressed Phase One and the Avengers into one movie, yeah.
Which is why I kind of think I like it better than the Avengers, because it's just like, I don't know, it takes some risks, which is what I also really like, because
this movie,
Marvel
this
films kind of got, not necessarily stale, but like, I don't know, Iron Man 3 was really great, Thor was kind of like doing the same thing again. Captain America kind of came out of nowhere and was really cool.
So what you're saying is there's one movie in Phase 2 that doesn't take risks, but the rest.
Iron Man 3 didn't take so many risks, but
Iron Man 3 took a major villain from the franchise and made him into the
That's a and what big... else is there to risk?
Well, it also featured more Tony Stark than
Iron Man. Dio and I were talking about this earlier. It shouldn't be called Iron Man 3. It should be called Tony Stark 1.75.
Tony Stark and the Iron Man.
Band name.
Maybe.
Make it happen. Anyway, I like how uncynical this movie is. Mm-hmm. Like, it just kind of embraces how goofy it is. It embraces the fact that it has a talking tree
and a little raccoon
and a
guy who could never be funny and is just always serious.
Thank you, Chris. And just, you know, embraces it, and we get these characters that are really, really, you know, enticing. And, you know, kudos to, I don't forget her name, the girl who wrote this. The woman who wrote Guardians of the Galaxy.
Nicole Perlman?
Yeah, Nicole Perlman. Nicole Perlman and James Gunn. Kudos to those guys.
Yep.
I love James Gunn. I just want to say it.
Yeah, and I like how James Gunn pulls a Joss Whedon. Like, there's so many parallels between Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy. It's, like, not even funny. You're taking this underground cult guy and raising him up, but, like, he doesn't forget who he is, so you can still tell that it's a product, even though it's got $200 million to it.
Yeah.
Because so much of this movie is, like, James Gunn regulars. His fucking brother, Sean Gunn, is in a bunch of it.
The Rocket's double.
Yeah, he did a lot of... He improvised the Jackasses in a Circle line. So you can thank Sean Gunn for that line.
Yeah.
Michael Rooker,
is Yondu.
Yeah, Nathan Fillion shows up. I think he plays the blue alien at the kiln.
Wait, really?
Yeah, I think that's Nathan Fillion. That's what I read.
Isn't he someone else?
What's that?
Isn't he a certain
someone else? If you're talking about the person I think you're talking about, that's Seth Green.
Yeah.
Whoa. Dude, yep. That was some modulation. That sounded nothing like him.
Anywho, so yes.
I can see it. I didn't pick it up at first.
But anyway, If you haven't seen Guardians of the Galaxy, go see it. If you're on the fence about seeing it again, go see it again. If you've already seen it, you know, support this movie.
Don't let Ninja Turtles take it over next week.
I'm sure it won't. At best, it'll do like second place.
Don't even let it do that. Let's be real.
Actually, I kind of want to totally pirate the new Ninja Turtles movie.
I agree on that one. Yeah.
Well, just the thing is, I'm really interested in looking at those turtles. Taylor, you can agree on this. Isn't Mira's the anatomy on them fucking horrifying?
My favorite thing ever is how Donatello looks like that fucking, like, screaming rabbit meme. Have you seen that picture of a screaming rabbit? Yeah, there's one shot in the movie. It was in one of the trailers where...
It's just a mash shot, or...
No. It's one where, like, Donatello, for some reason, it's a really quick cut where he, like, yells. He's like, no! And, like, he looks like one of those yelling, like, screaming rabbits. Like,
looking at one of these right now.
Yeah, it's like a white rabbit, and, like, looks like it's screaming.
Yeah.
And Donatello
looks... probably yawning.
It's something like that. But, like, that's what Donatello looks like in this movie. But,
You know what I kind of wish was real, though?
What?
Fucking that Onion article with the realistic penises.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Each penis has its own personality matching the character from the film.
Even though I think that they look really freaky and I don't like the style, I do like that they're actually doing something to differentiate the look between them besides just have the color-coded eye masks.
Well, yeah, they've been doing that for a little while. Like, the Nickelodeon show does that. They have very different body types.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And like,
but I like how I kind of agree with them on this one. They went more with it. Like, you know, they have different like looks. Like Donnie looks like a total nerd, and he has like all this tech and gear. And like,
even though I kind of fucking hate that. Though, like, honestly, because it's, like, such a stereotype, it's, like...
Oh, yeah, they stereotype it, but, like, it's something in the right direction. It's just not, like... It's just way... It needs to be toned down.
Yeah, but...
Because, like, when you have fucking him with glasses on his fucking...
Yeah, he has, like, anime goggles.
And
like,
then you put a fucking, like, a little strip in between to make it look like they were broken at some point. It's just like, dude, what are you doing?
Oh my god, I just looked it up. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, a new movie, is only 101 minutes.
Also, why are these, like, the worst summer blockbusters, like, getting longer and longer?
I don't know.
Actually, well, that's what I'm saying. I find it refreshing. Here's a sad state of events. Guardians of the Galaxy was 122 minutes, and I was refreshed by how short it was.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite things to add on to my little thoughts, I liked that I left the theater wanting more. Like, yeah. they didn't put everything they had on screen, you can kind of tell. And that, in a way, the film was... like, shorter than I wanted it. Like, I almost wanted more. Like, it wasn't that it was too short or anything. Like, pace-wise, it's pretty good.
You naturally want more. It's, like, what you kind of want from these.
It's more the fact that the pacing works so well that, like, by the end of the movie, you're like, you don't even really realize that 2 hours have gone by.
No, it's a really well-paced movie. It's a really well-edited movie. It leaves you wanting more. It's what you want from a summer blockbuster. And here's the most impressive thing about the writing. When you think about it, pretty much every character is a stock character.
Yeah.
But they still make it really interesting despite them being stock characters.
Well, what's great about it is that they give each character a backstory and motivation, or at least hint at a backstory. Every character has a motivation. They're not just there. You know, they're not just those archetypes, you know, like they're out of obligation or, you know, by the writers, you know.
Well, things, there are a lot of archetypes, like, oh, the law enforcement officer who has a history with the main character. Oh, the cocky pilot main character who sleeps with a lot of women. Oh, the Oh, the weapons guy. Oh, his best friend who doesn't talk a lot. Oh, the proud warrior thug out for revenge. Like, there is a lot of that, but they do it really well.
Mm-hmm. Well, because they subvert stuff and they embrace stuff. You know. It's like they don't try and, like, fool us. You know, they're not like, we're not doing this. It's like, you know that they're aware of this, of the tropes and stuff, so.
Like, and I wish I had the book on me right now, but there's a book that came out a couple years ago called The Revolution Was Televised. Mm-hmm. And there's a chapter devoted to the creation of Battlestar Galactica. And Ronald D. Moore, when he sent out the scripts to various actors like Edward James Olmos, the top page wasn't the cover page of the script. There was he sent out with a letter on top that said, "These are not archetypes. These are not the stereotypical characters you'll find in space operas. There will be no cocky pilots. There will be no side alien best friend sidekick. There will be no plucky comic relief guy. These are real people. They are flawed. They are you and me." And this doesn't go full Battlestar Galactica with it, but it does get... It's like a good middle ground between stock stuff, like what you get from everything after Star Wars and Battlestar Galactica. It's a great middle ground between them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I like how there is no comic relief character because everyone's funny.
Everyone's funny, and even Rocket Raccoon has a serious moment. Kind of wish they followed up a little bit more with that, but hey, it works.
Well, like, I was talking about this with other people, too, is, like, I think a lot of...
Wait, you talk about movies with other people besides us?
Yeah, I know, right? I think a lot of it is, like, especially with Groot and Rocket, like, they're kind of, I guess, pun not intended, planting the seeds for more of their story later on. Because, you know, Rocket Raccoon has a pretty, like, interesting backstory to him. And they imply that in this, you know, because they talk about how he has, like, these issues with his own self and how he feels like he's a monster because he's basically just this genetic experiment that was put together. So
did I tell you what I really hope happens to Rocket Raccoon if he finds his way back to Earth for Avengers 2 or 3? I really want him to show up to find his way into the middle of Texas and Bobby Hill adopts him for a while.
You mean, dude, that episode aired yesterday.
Did it?
Yes.
That's great.
That episode aired the day I saw the movie. So that I come home so with Bandit.
I only saw it once at age 8, and for some reason I still remember that episode.
Yeah, where Bobby Hill names a raccoon Bandit.
He was going to go with Masky, the superior name.
The superior name. One thing, okay, on Rocket Raccoon, one thing that kind of... I found kind of a funny coincidence. So you have Rocket Raccoon, who is voiced by
Bradley Cooper.
Now,
yeah, that guy.
What's another raccoon themed character with the last name Cooper?
Sly Cooper.
Sly Cooper. Is that like a weird ass like little coincidence?
Yeah.
So
I really like that he was a Brooklyner.
Yeah, I know there's people complaining about
him not being Australian.
No, he's not Australian. Australians. He's not Australian. Don't say fuck Australians. We have lots of fans from
Australians.
Shut the fuck up, Chris.
Especially you, Alex.
You're not even right, Chris. He's fucking cockney.
I like to think that because Chris was reading in comic form, he just inserts Australian accents into various characters who are not Australian.
But he's not even Australian. He's cockney.
Well, no, it was on Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes. They kind of made him more Australian than cockney.
Well, he's supposed to be cockney.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't... That seems like... That's like such a nitpick to me. Like,
that is a terrible nitpick.
When you talk about nitpicks, the most nitpicky of nitpicks, it's when... The
nitpickiest of nits.
Is when you're like, oh, this character is... Like, when the character's accent, which isn't even, like, of his planet. Like, he's a fucking talking raccoon. He could sound like anything. Really.
He could sound like Dick Van Dyke, for fuck's sake.
Well, he kind of does. He kind of does sound like Mary Poppins. Dick Van Dyke. And like look him up in like the recent Marvel vs. Capcom game where he shows up. And that's what he sounds like.
I know she had a very thick Chinese accent, actually.
Like the fucking like deleted scene from Iron Man 3.
Yes.
What if they did that in...
Ain't no one like me, y'all.
Oh my god.
You come here, asshole.
Fucking sounds like Khan from King of the Hill.
Gunray.
I thought you meant Khan from Khan, like my Chronomont's Khan.
No, I'm talking about Khan from King of the Hill. The actual Asian guy.
That was kind of racist of me in retrospect.
No, it's great.
Thanks for realizing that like a minute later, Casey.
Oh, no, I'm talking about that moment from second grade. I haven't realized it for this one yet.
I'm just saying, like, what if, like, in China, what would they, like, add for, like, the next Marvel movie? Like, what if they actually made him, like, really, like, offensively Chinese for some reason?
Dude, you know what they should do for the next Chinese Marvel thing?
What if
feature-length radioactive man movie?
Oh my god,
that would be the fucking worst.
Wait,
an atom.
I have an amazing idea. What if in China they change the entire opening so that it's in China, and the kid is a little Chinese boy?
Oh god,
who still happens
grows
to,
up to be Peter Quill?
Yeah, he grows up to be Chris Pratt.
Yes. All the yes.
Like it's the most.
I was going to suggest, just because Rocket Raccoon and Groot are animated characters, so you can just pretty much get him to say whatever you want.
Get Groot to say "I am Groot" in like Cantonese.
No, I was going to get him to say "I am Groot" and I support the Chinese regime.
Yeah, he supports. Oh, god. And like they like
we are, and then at the end we are Chinese regime.
And then they all have
probably
like
probably in the North Korean version. Just
and they all
to be
and
fair.
They like Photoshop. They added like Groot wearing a T-shirt for like the Beijing 2008 Olympics.
Oh god.
I want to know what the North Korean dub of this would be like if North Korean imported movies.
They don't import this because it was made in America.
Yeah, the same country who gave us The Interview, the greatest act of war.
I know, right? That movie looks amazing, by the way.
I really think they're going to try and attempt to land on the sun, I swear. North Korea is the worst.
Well, Taylor, did I ever actually suggest to you that at one point there is going to be a biopic on Kim Jong-il? Like, on a long enough time span, that's going to happen. Anyone can understand that.
I hope Kim Jong-il is played by... Wait, let me say this. I hope Kim Jong-il is played by the little Asian kid from School of Rock.
Yes.
Okay. Taylor,
but Taylor, think about this. At one point, the filmmakers are going to need to decide... Do we want to make a madcap farce, or do we want to make a sobering story about the horrors that man can do to other man? And you could tell both and make it an accurate biopic.
You could, like, fuse The Last King of Scotland with The Dictator.
You could!
Dude, and there has to be, like, a nuclear Nadal version in North Korea.
Oh my god.
They could just... riff off each other, because it's probably like the best thing about The Dictator, honestly, is just Jason Mantzoukas helping Sacha Baron Cohen get through America.
Let's see, you could make Borat and do an accurate portrayal of North Korea, or you could make The Last King of Scotland and do an accurate portrayal of North Korea. such a bizarre little country.
It's a great country.
Dude, they just opened up a summer school. Or that they're allowing rural children to go to so they can experience North Korean life.
That's wonderful.
Anywho, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy.
So I guess we should just, since we've said our thoughts on the film and given it our Geeks of College seal of approval to go see it.
Dude, that we should make a stamp for that solid. Seal of approval.
It's solid. Bam.
It's solid. 9 point.
Oh yeah, it's solid.
9 out of 10, it's solid.
It's solid. Like a turd.
11 out of 10, it's mediocre. Anyway,
I give it a 75%. It's okay.
It's solid. So we'll just say spoilers here. So
we're in the spoiler territory now.
Yes. So if you haven't seen it and are worried about spoilers, then stop listening right now.
Yeah, cut it out. We know you're still here. Cut that shit out.
Do you think they're gone? Do you think they're still here?
Oh, okay. I
think they're gone now.
Okay. Actually, you guys haven't seen it yet, so I have to go.
Okay, bye, Casey.
Yeah, get the hell out of here.
Casey's like
fucking shit.
Opinions of like officially invalidated forever.
Yeah. Good.
In fact, I'm fired.
Bye, Casey.
In fact, I have to jump out this roof now.
And then you play "Christmas Time Is Here" from the Peanuts.
God.
Anyway,
That's the music you should open this episode with.
Yeah. Yes. So, any highlights? What would you guys say is your favorite scene in the film?
My favorite scene is a post-credit scene.
Besides that, Casey. Which I guess we can now say what that is. Cause...
I'll do my favorite scene.
Well, I need to say mine.
Then go first.
My favorite scene was Benicio del Toro's character sitting outside with being
Cosmo the space dog.
Being licked by Cosmo the space dog, and you just hear someone go, "Why are you letting him lick you like that?" And he looks up, and it's Howard the fucking duck.
Howard the fucking duck.
Howard. Goddamn duck. George Lucas's greatest creation.
See? They are in the same universe.
Yes, they
are. Oh, no.
Star Wars and... That means
duck tits are in the Star Wars universe.
That means duck tits are in the Marvel universe.
They were already in the Marvel universe.
Not in the film universe. But now it is.
It's different. It was Marvel's first movie. You guys realize that, right?
I know it's the duck
is the first... of this Marvel upswing of movies.
Yeah, but it's not the same.
Now that it's been tied in, it means that it's in Iron Man. This is a franchise 30 years in the making.
Yeah. See, Casey gets what I'm talking about.
God bless Howard the Duck.
Oh, God. What do you let him talk? What do you let him look you like that for?
There was a little girl sitting two seats down from me, said, "It looks like Donald Duck." And I just said to her, "Shut up, bitch. You don't know what you're talking about."
You treat Howard the motherfucking duck with respect.
Dude, some guy talked over his entire dialogue, and I was just like, what? Fuck off, dude. I know it's midnight, but, like, don't do that shit.
I actually have no idea what his second line was because I just – and I'll admit, I said this right in the middle of the theater. Oh my God.
He says it kind of burns going down.
No. Chris, let me finish. In the middle of the theater, I wasn't trying to contain myself at all. I just lost it. And I just went, "Oh my God, that's Howard the Duck." And everyone could hear me. And I am a little embarrassed by that. But at the same time, oh my God, that was Howard the Duck. The fucking Marvel movie.
Yes.
And
I think that was one of the cues that it's like, yep, this is a James Gunn movie, because that seems like a very James Gunn move.
Yeah. And as I was being escorted out of the theater by the police for punching a 5-year-old girl.
In the face.
I just was in awe that I saw Howard the Duck in a Marvel movie.
A Marvel movie.
Voiced by Seth Green.
In the same universe as Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark, Chris Evans, Captain America, and
the science-based Thor, which I will still never understand.
Well, you know.
How dare they try to reconcile a movie's universe so that it makes sense.
And then they bring in Howard the Duck.
Yes.
Which makes no sense.
Also, apparently, there's a rumor that Beta Ray Bill shows up in, like, the background of the collector's room.
He probably does. I saw a Chitauri.
Yeah, there's a Chitauri, there's a Dark Elf, there's a lot of little
kids. There's a Lloyd Kaufman in there, too.
Yeah, Lloyd Kaufman's one of the inmates.
Dude, I fucking love that. Like, this is
hey, man.
Like, yeah, 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 yeah.
when the director of the film is a screenwriter.
I just read this. Apparently, Rob Zombie is the voice of the Ravager Navigator.
Yep.
That's funny.
But, I mean, when the director of your film is a screenwriter of the classic trauma film, Tromeo and Juliet, you fucking have Lloyd Kaufman in your fucking movie.
And that way, Lloyd Kaufman gets to do whatever the fuck Lloyd Kaufman wants, because he gets a little muddy out of it.
Well, apparently Lloyd Kaufman's been in every James Gunn movie.
Yeah.
He was in Slither, he was in Super. Yeah, now he's in this. And apparently one of the Slither slugs shows up in the collector's collection. So that's pretty fun.
Oh yeah, I heard that. That sounded awesome.
But Casey, do you have an actual like another favorite scene? I know, right? Like clearly, this movie just like was shit.
Let's give him a minute, and I'll go with one of mine.
Yeah, Chris, go with yours because I need to think.
Ooh, child, things are gonna be easier. What are you doing? I'm distracting you, you big turd blossom.
Chris, you can actually describe the scene that you're quoting.
I don't. It's just, I want to, like, play that back in my head forever. It's okay, basically, it's just like, Ronan thinks he's won. So Chris Pratt, you know, straps in his beloved, awesome mixtape, Volume 1, in his brain, and starts dancing out to Ooh, Child. And it's the fucking greatest thing. Like, he hands it off to Gamora, who just looks at him like he just shit in her mouth. And fucking, and you know, Ronan just keeps getting collectively more pissed. Collectively. And then Chris Pratt just says what I just said, which is just, I'm distracting you, you big turd blossom. And then Drax and Rocket, shoot out the Power Stone. Is that what that one is?
Yeah, it's the Power Stone.
Yeah.
But Taylor, did I tell you, I like to think that this is Hugo Drax from Moonraker. He got picked up by a spaceship somewhere along the line.
Oh, when he was thrown out in space.
Oh, God.
And he lived for, like, 40 more years.
But yeah, his skin turned a little blue because he had a lot of lack of oxygen and never really quite recovered, so he kind of spent the next 40 years building muscle, and he then had a family, but he kind of lost the family, got a little pissed off, and up in prison because they found out he was a Moonraker.
Yes.
Fun fact, in the Nova Collective, you can be sentenced to prison if you are a star in a movie Moonraker.
Yes. That's why we haven't seen any of Roger Moore for a while. The Nova Corps had him.
Actually, Roger Moore goes on Facebook once a month and says, I'm doing an AMA on Reddit. And he always shoots a recent picture of him. I just look at him and go, you look just like my grandfather.
He is your grandfather.
Dude, if I'm the grandson of Bond, of James Bond.
Those kids that are probably actually the grandchildren of a Bond actor, they probably totally don't take advantage of it and totally abuse the fact that they're the living spawn of a Bond actor. Like Sean Connery's like takes his grandson to like the golf course and is like, you know, waxing poetic about shooting Goldfinger, and his like stupid shitty grandson is just like on his phone like, whatever granddad, I don't care. And then he's like, shut up a bitch, and then like kicks his ass at golf.
Oh,
that's how it plays in my head.
That opening was also something else.
You have another favorite part?
Yeah, Come and Get Your Love. Dude, like, every musical sequence, it just works.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the fucking scene where Chris Pratt describes Footloose to an alien.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Kevin Bacon.
We're all Kevin Bacon.
We're all Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, that line's one of my favorite lines. And if I had to pick a favorite scene from the movie proper, it's actually a really tiny scene. It's getting down to the core of the movie, and when they get aboard Ronan's ship, they can't see anything. So Groot, showing one of many abilities that he doesn't show until the plot requires him to, he's kind of a walking Deus Ex Machina sometimes.
It happens when you're a giant tree.
Yeah.
When you're a tree.
When you're a tree, you're a tree all the way. From the first root you grow to the last leaf today.
There you go, kid.
But he, but Groot releases a bunch of tiny little glowy shits. And then you get Drax talking, and he's clearly learned a lot since Moonraker, and he just goes, this big tree is my friend, that man is my friend, this green alien who...
This green alien whore.
Yeah, he calls Groot a big dumb tree, too.
Yeah, and
big dumb tree is my friend.
And I really like it. It's a really heartwarming and yet funny scene.
And then he caps it off with just shooting Nebula. And then he's just nobody talks shit about my friends.
Yeah, no, that is like,
nigga, you just talk shit about them.
Well, he didn't look at us talking shit. That's the beauty of it.
I know. He doesn't think it's talking shit. That's why I love Drax the most, because he's just always fucking serious, like that line where he's like, hold on, I have it somewhere. Nothing would fly over my head. My reflexes are too quick and I would just catch it.
I made a metaphor. Close enough.
Yeah.
I made a metaphor.
I think my favorite scene, there's a lot of them. There's a lot of them to name. You know, I like the very beginning of the film. I like most of just stuff with Star-Lord's character. Awesome. Was it awesome? Is it Awesome Mix Volume 3 or Volume 2?
Awesome Mixtape Volume 1 and 2.
Yeah, when he opens a gift at the end. I like the scene where they think about the plan. You know, the 12% of a plan.
I have part of a plan.
When they're just jumping back and forth, I think it's really good.
My favorite part of that is how, even though... Why am I blanking on Zoe Saldana's character's name?
Gamora,
the giant turtle that's friend to children everywhere.
I nearly bought every Gamora movie on Blu-ray today. Don't make me regret it.
What I'm just saying, he's a friend to all children.
Buy every fucking Gamora movie.
Because it's $8.
Well, when you say it like that. But it's fucking Gamora still.
Anyway, Gamora's fucking awesome. You shut your fucking mouth. Anyway,
he's the Casey. Friend of children.
All the way.
Gamera will
all the way. He has blade arms. Suck my nads.
No, thank you. His
blade arms.
Anyway,
but if you get kidnapped by aliens, Gamera will totally go and rescue you. Because he's friend of children, apparently.
Thanks, that one episode of Mystery Science Theater.
Friend of the children.
Well, no, I was just going through the list because the Blu-ray set was at Best Buy, and just reading down the list of summaries, and one of them just like, when two American Boy Scouts are kidnapped, it's up to Gamera.
Oh, God.
Which makes me think, like, what if Gamera's, like, in True Detective trying to solve an actual kidnapping?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. When Rustin Cole and Detective Gamera make the case, and it's like...
That's the next one, season. It's Colin Farrell, Elizabeth Moss, and Gamera.
And Gamera. Anyway, you were saying, Casey, about Gamora.
But Gamora... What was I saying about Gamora? Goddamn.
She's not putting up with any of their shit?
No, keep going, because I can't remember what I was talking about.
Goddamn it, Casey!
Because it's the fucking scene you were talking about where they're all just, like, fighting over that 12% of a plan, and she's just looking at him like a bunch of petulant children. It's
12% where she... Well, that's not it. It's just where she says, well, it's barely even a concept. She's on his side. It's just like, admittedly, you barely got something here, man.
Yeah. I don't know. Groot just goes,
I am Groot.
Because there's just so many great, like, little lines in that scene, and you kind of get everyone's relationship and characters in that scene.
Well, that's the problem I was having there, where you said, what's your favorite scene? And I'm hard-pressed to come up with, like, many scenes that stand out, but I can get so many tiny moments or lines of dialogue or interactions that stand out, and they're amazing.
Well, I mean, not necessarily. It doesn't have to be like a full-on, like, 3-minute scene, but if it's like little moments too, that count as well. But, and the jailbreak scene is great too. Because I love how it's filled with like so many different things. Like it's got humor, it's got action, it's got a little bit of suspense too. Like when like the whole running gag with Rocket needing fake limbs and whatever. Like I love how you're just having
I'm gonna need that guy's leg.
Like you have this amazing like you know Groot takes the thing and then the little security thing and then like shit hits the fan. Rocket gets a gun and they're spinning around causing havoc, and they just cut to Star-Lord asking for the dude's leg. Like that's pretty fucking awesome. And then there's some great stunt work and you know stuff like with I don't know if I'm assuming Zoe Saldana didn't do her own stunts. If she did, she did great. If she didn't, kudos to the person.
Vin Diesel.
She is now, but probably not. But not when she filmed.
Vin Diesel actually did the stunts for her.
Yes, he mo-capped it. I liked a lot of
the. Which is weird because she did the Groot stunts. Even the parts where she has to elongate her arms like that.
Did you know that, okay, so you guys know the dancing Groot scene at the very end?
Yeah.
Did you know that that's James Gunn doing the, like, motion reference for that?
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, so.
I can see it.
Fun fact, that happened. Anyway.
Oh, other fun fact, you know what the Milano is named after?
Alyssa Milano.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a good kick out of that.
I thought it was named after Davy Crockett.
Yes. So.
When did Davy Crockett?
Wait, what was that?
When did Davy Crockett?
Yes, me and that American folk hero. How dare you?
He's not even real. Shrek is more real than Davy Crockett.
Davy Crockett was a real human being.
You're thinking of Daniel Boone, which I think was also a real guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Daniel Boone is real too.
Shrek is more real than either of them will be.
Dude, Davy Crockett was
Shrek.
Shrek is not as... Saying the word Shrek is not a punchline, nor a setup, nor anything that resembles a joke.
Say that's Shrek like, is Drek, I dare you.
No, I won't, because it's not funny, and I... You dare me to say something I don't feel like saying, nor would cause humor. No. Now, on the other hand, Davy Crockett was a fucking congressman for 8 years. He was a real guy. You have him confused with fucking Buffalo Bill, I think.
Buffalo Billy Bob Thornton.
Duh.
Who played him in a movie.
Yep.
Yep.
Which is kind of underrated, because people say it's shit, and it's okay.
But it's not great, but still not shit.
Well, it's not great, and I'm not going to look at it and go, oh my god, what an amazing movie. But it's better than it gets the credit for.
Yes. Anywho, if you're still listening...
David Bowie should have played Jim Bowie.
Yes. Yes. Moon Age Danger. So, anything else we want to talk about with Guardians of the Galaxy?
I don't know. I think we almost covered everything.
The villain could have been more impressive, and sometimes there's some stuff that could have been clarified better, but it's still...
He served his purpose.
He's a stock character.
I think the only real purpose that Ronan really serves is to tease Thanos.
Oh, they tease the fuck out of Thanos.
And to kind of introduce the Kree race. Because it seems like they're kind of going that direction in the movies, like doing like a secret war or some kind of like Captain Marvel type thing.
Yeah, hopefully, because we need a fucking Ms. Marvel movie or something.
Now she's Captain Marvel, so there you go.
Yeah, even better.
I would agree. I mean, Ronan's like probably one of the weaker aspects of it, but I still love that that sequence that Chris brought up where with Ooh Child. It's like that kind of like raised Ronan like a little bit up for me.
Yeah.
Well, Ronan is a lot like most tertiary characters in the Marvel universe. Where if you look at the tertiary characters in this movie, they're played by Lee Pace, Benicio Del Toro, John C. Reilly, and Glenn Close.
And Karen Gillian.
Yeah, I elevate her above tertiary character, but you could still qualify her as that too. But there are five really talented actors who are given stock characters, like most of Marvel's tertiary characters. They're stock characters, but the quality of the actors elevates them, not to the point where the actors feel like they've been used to their full potential, but it still makes them more interesting than they would be otherwise. Like, yeah. Karen Gillan didn't need to play not Gamora.
Nebula.
I should remember that
one. It's easy. It's a real world.
But you didn't need to get Karen Gillan, but you got someone that chops Karen Gillan, and that did elevate it. Same with Benicio Del Toro as the Collector, or Glenn Close at... Glenn Close was kind of wasted.
Colin... Who did she call pricks?
What about Peter Serafinowicz?
What's up,
Peter Serafinowicz?
He's the guy that's like, what a bunch of a-holes or whatever.
What a bunch of a-holes. You know, when I saw that, like, Glenn Close last year.
One at a time.
All right, Glenn Close should have played the what a bunch of a-holes guy.
Just been like an Albert, was it,
Albert fucking Nubs.
Yeah, Albert Nubs.
Oh.
Where she still plays a dude.
Yeah.
Yes. And then she dies. Spoilers. Again.
We're in the territory.
I actually didn't know
We're that. In the nowhere.
What?
I didn't know that part, Taylor.
What?
I didn't know that she died.
No, I'm talking about Peter Serafinowicz's character.
Oh, okay.
Remember? Anyway, anything else?
Sorry.
I mean, I think a lot of like this movie had such a hard goal. You know, it had a very, you know,
it was totally the hard sell.
Well, it's like it's a book that very few people actually know. You have arguably the most world building and exposition you have in a Marvel movie yet.
Even more than Captain America was just saying something.
Well, Captain America and Thor. I mean, Thor is like in a crazy Asgardian dimension, whatever.
Yeah, Captain America, dude, they needed to establish that entire war thing that was going on. They need to introduce both sides of it. God, no one knew anything about that.
No, but I'm talking about the new one.
The new one?
Yeah.
What was hard about the new one?
The Shield dismantling and kind of fucking it up for like everything, and
but that's a different thing. This one needed to establish the entire.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying it's more. I'm just saying something.
Well, what we're still talking about two different things. You're talking about plot points. We're talking about the exposition, everything in the first act that you need to know in order to go along with the movie. And that's another thing that does bug me about this movie. They give you so much in the first act that even in the third act, I was thinking, okay, oh, that's that. Okay, I needed to clarify to myself several times. And as cheesy as, say, the opening text crawl of Star Wars may be, and as overdone as it is, when you watch A New Hope, you know you don't need any prior information, or you don't need to actually ever remind yourself what something is.
You don't need three shitty fan films to figure out what the fuck is going on.
Chris, let me finish. But you don't, but you, just through that text crawl, that does clarify things. I think that this movie could have used something like that to establish what, say, Ronan's relationship to Nova Prime is, or you know, all that. And I got it. It's not like it was too hard to follow, but it would have made things a little bit easier. I wouldn't have been trying to remind myself in the third act about these things.
Well, I think a lot of that just stems from the fact that Ronan doesn't have a whole lot going for him. Like, he's just like, oh, he's a member of the Kree race, and he wants to, like, you know, reestablish the Kree as a dominant thing.
He's genocidal Kree.
Well, that's the thing. I was trying to figure out, like, okay, so the Kree and... Are the Kree a race, or are they...
They're a race.
I was trying to... Like, it's just a case of, I got it. It's... Not like, oh, I couldn't get it, it was too complicated. It was just, okay, this could have used a little more clarification in Act 1. And it's a very fine line to walk, because you need to it's the first act. You need to get the movie going as fast as possible, but you need to still exposit all this stuff in a way that's not going to confuse the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they didn't quite nail it, but they got pretty close.
I think they did a better job than most probably thought they would have.
Yeah. Oh, it's this entire movie is it's better than it would have been if it was in 2009.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like,
what's the difference if it was in 2009?
Never mind, Chris.
No, seriously, I don't get it.
Moving on.
All right.
I'm just saying,
explain later.
Moving on. All right. So, I just think, I can forgive that kind of stuff just for, you know, the movie we get. You know, there are some times where I even found a little bit of, like, the scene transitions a little jarring in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, again, that's just it's like a necessary evil, you know, just to kind of get all this stuff out of the way and just move on so you can get to the fun part of the movie. And it's why I'm glad that they don't, like, they do a good job of hinting at future storylines, like Rocket and Groot and whatever. Because if they actually probably, if they had much more of that, it would just be kind of too much, you know, going on. And when it's something that you can explore, now that you have a lot of the expositing out of the way, you can explore much more fully in a sequel. So, now that everything's been established.
Yeah, I'm really excited for that sequel.
Yep, 2017.
War of Kings. Dude, I saw someone posted in that Refugees of Spill group, like, the lineup for superhero films in, like, the next 6 years. And the shit is stacked.
Yep.
And then we got, the Netflix series coming out soon.
Yeah, we got Daredevil 2015.
I want to work on that.
Is it in New York that they're filming it?
Yeah, they're filming all of them in New York.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I want to get in on that shit.
Okay, so, anyway, as we said earlier, Guardians of the Galaxy, go fucking watch it. It's awesome.
Duh.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Someone was going to say it.
Any other thoughts before we sign off?
Go get hooked on a feeling, kids.
Howard the Duck.
I like turtles.
I like turtles. Howard the Duck.
I like raccoons. I like raccoons.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
And on that note, we can sign off. First episode on One of Us. As we end every episode, or most episodes of Geeks at College, keep studying.
Study. But it's summer break.
Whatever. You never not study. You can always study.
Let the kid have the break.
No.
No, we must always study everything.
Yes, keep studying, motherfucker.
You guys are like drunk alcoholic dads.
My fuel at the libraries for learning.
Keep studying.